Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Amira Enya, Jeannie Ives, John McCarron, and Chris Roebling. Our program tonight coming to you from our own base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And tonight, if you go to beyondthebeltway.com, you will be able to hear the audio portion of tonight's program. Wherever you're listening, we will not be presenting the video portion of our broadcast just tonight on the internet. But again, the radio portion will be offered, and a little bit later on this evening, there will be a television program that we will talk about a little bit later on that you will be able to see from coast to coast and around the world on our website, beyondthebeltway.com, as well as in Chicago, on Channel 20 at midnight tonight. But we have lots to talk about this evening. We've got great Republicans, great Democrats, and let's begin by with one of the big stories of last week, and that is the debate which took place in Las Vegas. And Amira, I want to get your sense. The last time you were on this program, we should say that you were here not as an official representative of the draft Biden campaign, but you were sitting in for someone from that campaign who had to drop out at the last moment on the orders from the White House, we were told. So I mention that because I don't know whether you're going to trash anybody who was before the debate the other evening, but I wanted to put it in context. And first of all, let me just ask you bluntly, are you for Joe Biden? You want him in the race?
Well, I would like to see Joe Biden in the race. I actually think there's an opportunity, there's space for him just amongst the candidates that already exist. I think that Senator Sanders has certainly ignited a very vibrant part of the Democratic Party, particularly with millennials and with people who are really looking for policies that affect the people of the United States.
Do you think there is less space for him today because of the perceived dominance in that debate of Hillary Clinton the other night?
I don't know if there's less space. I think the timing is actually the issue for him. I think the longer he waits, I mean, there are just some deadlines that you can't get around. For example, the filings are necessary in December. And so the longer he waits, it just means less time for him to gain the kind of traction that he needs as a candidate. It's one thing if he's a prospective candidate. But once you become a candidate, the dynamic shifts.
John McCarron joins us. You're close to being a Democrat yourself. You're certainly a liberal. You're proud of that. You've been a longtime reporter and a journalist, but also you teach journalism at DePaul University. You're not backing away from that assessment of your progressive politics, are you? What'd you think of the debate? Is there a reason for Joe Biden to get into this race?
Well, it's a great question. And going into that evening, I thought maybe he should, and especially after seeing him, interviewed on the Tonight Show and one night did well kind of missed him. But then Hillary.
You mean on the Colbert Show?
Colbert Show. And then I thought Hillary just came on like a freight train. Is it sexist of me to say that she looked terrific? I thought she was she was upbeat, cheerful, yet authoritative. I mean, I just thought she kind of ran away with it. And I feel a lot better about her being the front runner now than I did before the debate.
Let me just say, if it's sexist, I will second that I think looks great.
She's in her late 60s.
I don't think it's sexist at all. I thought she did she was very strong.
She looked good, and I thought she talked good. Chris Roebling, let's hear from a couple of Republicans.
Yeah.
Would you agree that she did better than you had hoped she would do?
Well, I hoped that she would fall on her face, stepping on the banana peel on her way to the lectern. But no, she did a good job, and it was about time. But, she was running against three pygmies. I don't know. Maybe that's sexist or something. I don't know. But she was running against three really inconsequential people. I mean, Lincoln Chafee, give me a break. He was so bad, the Republicans wanted him to leave. And then you've got James Webb, also not really any kind of presidential timber. No. And then you had Bernie Sanders, the Democratic Socialist. And I understand what my colleagues
said. But he wasn't the pig name. O'Malley was
O'Malley.
The pig name.
O'Malley was awful. Yeah. And Bernie Sanders is going to bankrupt the United States of America. So who is she running against? I mean, this is if she didn't look good against this crowd. And I do want to say, Anderson Cooper, you know, I think he earned his sinecure with the Clinton Foundation. He paid them back for what they did for him. And I want to see more from the liberal media giving softballs to the Democrats.
Jeannie Ives, state representative from Illinois, West Point graduate. Your assessment?
Well, I thought the debate gave the Republicans a lot of good talking points and a lot of good things that they can throw up on a commercial. And flat out, when Hillary gets up there and says, look, I'm a progressive, and denies everything else, well, that right there makes the commercial itself. Or I'm going to – there they are sitting in Las Vegas, the epicenter of really capitalism, and she's going to save capitalism from itself. Yeah. So, I mean, I just can't wait for her to really be challenged against a Republican where, you know, she can shine against that group. But honestly, I kind of thought Bernie Sanders did much better. If you looked at the applause lines and the hoops and hollers over some of the things that he said, and actually some of the nuances to his language that made even me sit up and say, well, he's really touching in on the crony capitalism that even Republicans don't like. So I thought he did well.
Can you give a nod verbally to Bernie Sanders?
Oh, absolutely. I think that Bernie Sanders, I mean, he's very practiced at what he is doing. You know, he was here.
He's real.
He is absolutely who he is. He's very comfortable in his skin. And that, by the way, I think is a more important qualification for being president than a lot of this other goofy stuff that we talk about. But Bernie Sanders had an event here in Chicago. He went to the University of Chicago, graduated, I think, in 1965. Every seat was taken at the Rockefeller Memorial Chapel. And there was roaring applause for Bernie Sanders. He's terrific at what he does, but what he does appeals to a very thin slice of the electorate.
Is there room for Joe Biden to come back to you, Amara? Is there room for Joe Biden, if he gets in this race, is he going to peel any votes away from Bernie Sanders, or are all of his votes going to come at the expense of Hillary Clinton?
Again, I do think that there is room for Biden because Clinton and Sanders represent two extremes in the Democratic Party. Sanders really appeals to the populist economic inequality. He's very consistent. He has been consistent, whereas Clinton has challenges on just being perceived as someone who's willing to say whatever it takes, really a corporate Democrat who's going to say whatever it takes to win. And so there is a gap there between what they say is Bernie's Democratic socialism and then Clinton's corporate Democrats, and Biden kind of fits right there in the middle.
So Biden is selling himself. Is Biden the best person to sell the third term of Obama?
I think so. I mean, he's the closest representation of the third term of the president. People are more comfortable with him. They're more familiar with him. Bernie comes in largely unknown outside of his region. Clinton, almost too known as far as her length of time in politics. And Biden is known, but people are still, I think, comfortable
with him.
He's
known, but he's got a lot of baggage. If you do the Google search on him, he's got lots of political baggage. I mean, he looks good right now because he's not in yet.
Yeah, well, and he has a tendency to speak off the cuff. I remember when he went to the reception for the passage of Obamacare, he says, this is a big something deal, and it wasn't something, and it went out nationally. Yeah, so he does tend to pop up, but he's got a lot of humanity. You can't deny him that.
There's no question about that. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that humanity against real hardball politics, defending past political actions, which he may have a problem with. Back shortly.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. Now, one thing that there was not much discussion of was Benghazi. There was a spot where Anderson Cooper gave Hillary a lifeline, although he did try to bring up the subject of the emails, but Bernie Sanders let her get off the hook. Let me ask again, Amara, is the political damage of the email scandal and the Benghazi scandal, is that something in your view that is behind Hillary Clinton, or is that still one of the reasons that maybe Joe Biden wants to get in this race?
I think we haven't heard the last of it. I think that in the debate, Senator Sanders sort of gave Hillary a break. But I think that I don't know that we've heard the last of it. And I feel that it's something that can pop up again at the most inopportune time. And maybe that is part of the calculus that Biden is using to whether to jump in or not.
Chris Roebling.
Hillary is under criminal investigation, and yet she's getting away with running for president. It's absolutely outrageous. And if this was any kind of Republican whatsoever, they'd be drummed out of the race. The New York Times and the Washington Post and the Boston Globe and the LA Times would lead the charge against anyone with a presumption to run while being investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It's just asinine. And then you hear Trey Gowdy today on Face the Nation, and he says, look, I've been trying to get emails from the State Department for 18 months. Now, it's been stonewalling and slow walking, and now they're under a court order that they absolutely, and kicking and screaming, I might add, they have been refusing to give the public what is ours, and now they're down to one tranche a month. And it is, the whole Hillary thing is an outrage. I think Joe Biden is going to get in, and I think he's going to get in because I think the White House knows, notwithstanding President Obama illicitly injecting himself into the thing and saying on his 60 Minutes interview, nothing happened, just like he said, nothing ever happened at the IRS when they were abusing all of the conservatives.
John,
it's just an outrage.
John McCarron, put your journalist hat on. Is this an issue of Hillary Clinton just stonewalling and the FBI is not buying it?
Well, she's been very slow and hesitant to ante up the material that she had, and it may have been done selectively. And I agree with Christy to the extent that when the FBI gets involved, there could be what we call in Chicago a jackpot. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. I mean, they could find something amongst those thousands of emails that would be illegal or incriminating. But just see Chris get so excited about it, I think, until he's really worried about Hillary, and maybe on next week's show he'll be saying she shouldn't have killed Vince Foster.
I said that 3 months ago.
But again,
or the Whitewater scandal. Don't forget the Whitewater scandal.
The criticism from the Democrats about the Benghazi investigation is that it has been focused exclusively on Hillary Clinton. But we would not have known about the email issue. You could call it a scandal if not. We would not have known about the email issue had it not been for the investigation. It's one of the little threads that is being pulled apart by Chairman Gowdy, and we'll know more about it on Thursday when Hillary Clinton has probably – it's probably the most important day of the campaign for her.
Sure, and she's going to simply repeat her same talking point. She's going to take responsibility. She's going to say, I'm still standing. She's going to say that the committee is partisan. And she's going to come out of there having given us nothing new. But it doesn't matter what she says because the American people, I mean, poll after poll still says that some of the words most describing of her are a liar, untrustworthy, and she cannot get away from that. So it doesn't matter what happens for Benghazi hearing, really, I think, on Thursday. Each side is set, but American people already don't believe her, and she's got a credibility problem.
Is she the only one that has been reluctant? Can't we say that the Justice Department or the State Department has also been very reluctant to bring
the White House started the Benghazi cover-up, and the Benghazi cover-up has now overtaken the entire federal government. And what happened here is that you got the Benghazi cover-up because no one knows where our president was when our ambassador was being murdered, and that tells you a lot of what you need to know. Now, there's a lot more that Gowdy is going, and I disagree, Bruce, respectfully. This thing is not about Hillary Clinton. This committee has had 4 dozen witnesses already testify. Not one of them has been Clinton. And it's got another 2 or 3 dozen coming after Hillary Clinton. So this is not about Hillary Clinton. But that what happened is you had this whole Benghazi cover-up going along, engulfing the federal government. And then we find out that Hillary, while running for president, has been hiding the fact that she had this extra server. And so that vectored into the Benghazi thing, and you have this explosion.
Which the White House actually are the ones, they're the ones who actually said, you know, outed her on the extra server. They're the ones who outed her.
Right.
So, and then on top of it, you know, she has said, well, I've said I would testify earlier. And, you know, repeatedly, Trey Gowdy has always said, look, we want you to testify when we have all the emails. And they have been leaked out periodically, one email after another. They just got another, you know, 100 pages a couple weeks ago.
They just got Chris Stevens, who was the ambassador who was murdered. They just got his.
Democrat friends have been lying throughout, saying there's nothing more to investigate. And do you know the very first investigation to get the emails of our ambassador is the Trey Gowdy administration? And the Democrats have been saying there's no more to learn here.
So something that I said the last time I was here was that the best policy for Hillary Clinton was to be transparent and to be forthright because there was a credibility issue, because the longer this thing drags on, it looks worse and worse for her. Now, frankly speaking, if there was nothing that she perceived to be damaging as far as what her role was, then I'm not sure why being forthright was such an issue from the beginning. Now, it just looks bad. As it continues, it just looks bad, frankly.
Well, the point is that the email aspect of this, I also think is easier for the average voter to comprehend.
Sure.
It looks she looks like she's trying to do something to hide it, and then when she destroyed 30,000 emails, that didn't help her credibility. Let's go to Roger listening to us in Springfield, Illinois, on WMAY. Go ahead, you're on the air, coast to coast.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay.
The bottom line is on the email, classified, but the server is the key. It's not supposed to be in some barn in Chappaqua or in Colorado. She has violated 18 U.S.C. 973 of the Espionage Act, subsection S, period.
Amen,
you can
amen.
Argue all that other stuff. That's number one. Number two, Benghazi. Her and the guy in the White House have said they got stand down orders. She didn't provide proper protection for the ambassador. And then she gets up and testifies. You remember what she said? Who cares?
What difference does it make?
Can I say something here, quick?
Jeannie Ives is going to come. We should mention you're a retired captain in the United States.
Not retired, but I just did my 6 years, and I left to be a full time mother, which to me is, you know, just about. It takes every bit of military to do that, too. But you know what? I'll tell you what. There was a private meeting with Trey Gowdy and a bunch of us at a recent event in Naperville. And I asked Trey Gowdy, I said, look, my son is an infantry officer. And I want to know that he's going to be protected out there. You need to go after, and I said this to Trey Gowdy, I said, you need to go after Hillary Clinton and find out why people were not protected when they should have been. That's what I want to know as a mother of a military. And he said, that is not actually our focus. Our focus is to find out exactly what operationally happened throughout. And so while that question needs to still be answered in my mind, his focus is on exactly how we prevent this in the future and exactly what happened. So and that's what he said.
I want to say that this is hugely significant for every American, and Republicans don't frequently say this, but, you know, when Reagan was president, we had a bombing in Beirut right in front of our embassy, and about 25 people died, 7 of whom were CIA operatives. Others were members of the diplomatic service.
Well, I think more than 25 died.
No, on the embassy bombing, I think it was 25.
Then
that was Hezbollah. That was Hezbollah, and we had another we had various other bombings. Obviously, in the Clinton administration, we had bombings at the embassies in Africa, right? And I don't think, and Hillary Clinton aside, Barack Obama aside, Bill Clinton aside, Ronald Reagan aside, our folks who go on our behalf to represent us in the capitals of the world deserve to be protected, regardless of the party of the president and regardless of the party of the Secretary of State. And this is this was a legation, an official legation of the United States of America. Our ambassador was there conducting our business, and he was not protected. And that is an outrage for every American, whether you're Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal.
John.
Chris brought up the Lebanon bombings because, I mean, that didn't disqualify Ronald Reagan from being a president. Not only that, but an icon of the conservative Republican movement.
You're absolutely right. I think that that took place at a time when we were much newer to the international terrorism game. But I'm not – but look, the truth is – that we need to know the truth, and whether it reflects poorly on Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or the other Bush, we have an interest in our people being protected. This is what Jeannie was just saying about her son.
Yeah. Well, the thing that has always amazed me about that that moment in our history is that. Where was the Secretary of State? You asked where the president was.
Right.
Where was
she
the
Secretary? Finding the video that she says blamed caused the whole thing.
But the point is, as the Secretary of State, when one of your members of your administration, your Secretarial State administration, is murdered, you're nowhere to be found.
Right.
They sent out someone other than herself to do it. There was no press conference. She wasn't anywhere. She was at the side when the caskets came in with the president. But she was not putting herself out there to answer questions about the death of one of her own employees. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Schumacher back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. If you're listening from coast to coast and border to border, if you're listening on the internet tonight, again, we are presenting this evening just the audio portion of our program, not the video portion. But again, a little bit later on, we will be offering an interview or a discussion that will also be our television show on WYCC tonight. And that will look into some of the efforts for criminal justice reform. We've got a great panel of groups together, and they will be talking about the recent decision. By the Bureau of Prisons, by the end of this month, they are releasing 6,000 federal prisoners, and within the next year, 46,000 federal prisoners will be released. And we're going to talk about whether or not they are prepared to reenter society, or are they going to go right back within 3 to 5 years. So some interesting ideas and suggestions about the training and reentry efforts of those who are in federal and state prisons. That'll be our television discussion this evening. And Amara Enya joins us, and tell us a little bit about who you are and what are you up to, young lady?
Well, it's good to be here. I am a public policy consultant. I also do community organizing on the west side of Chicago and the executive director of the Austin Chamber of Commerce. I'm a resident of the west side, East Garfield Park, and currently exploring a bid for the 7th Congressional.
Now, you've had Congressman Danny Davis. You've had conversations with him.
Certainly.
That is the seat that you covet.
Mm-hmm.
And what are those conversations about, if I may ask?
Well, I mean, they're just very productive conversations. I mean, we're talking not so much about me wanting the seat. It's really about transitioning. It's really about what the next step for that seat looks like and what things can we get done. What does he want to get done? And then at the point at which it's necessary to make that transition, we need to be prepared.
And we should mention that that congressional district is also the congressional district from which this program originates every
yes.
Sunday night. And also go back to my comment about what the television show tonight is. It has more ex-offenders on the streets of that congressional district than any congressional district in the United States.
Yes, indeed.
Chris Roebling, tell us who you are. We know who you are.
I'm
for those
a guy
out there in radio land,
yeah.
Tell us you look a little bit like Robert Redford.
Yeah, yeah, really. With the
which isn't a compliment anymore, I might
right.
add.
Thanks so much. No, I want to say I'm a friend of this program who goes back to sitting in the chairs like these with Danny Davis when he was an alder person.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I remember when he was an alder man.
Yeah, I call them alder people. Anyway, yeah, and then he made it to the county, and then he finally made it to Congress. My gosh, there were so many races, and there's so many attempts on his
part. And he ran for mayor.
So now we're looking at – okay. Anyway, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me back.
And you're an analyst for WGN?
Yeah, I'm the WGN television Republican analyst.
And Jeannie Ives also joins us. Jeannie, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I graduated from West Point, served in the Army, and I'm a mother of five, and I currently am an Illinois state representative out of the Wheaton area.
Having fun in Springfield?
I enjoy making the argument.
You can't have fun in Springfield anymore, can you?
There's no fun in Springfield right now without a budget.
John McCarron, tell everybody a little bit about your illustrious past.
Yeah, I'm a longtime, three-decade Chicago Tribune recovering editorial writer at this point. I have left the newspaper to write freelance, where I write a lot about community organizing and whatnot in neighborhoods like Austin for Local Initiative Support Corporation, or LISC. And I also do a little teaching, adjuncting now with some graduate students at DePaul University here in Chicago.
We have talked about the Democrats. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the Republicans. And I want to begin by making a comment, because a couple of weeks ago on this program, I said that in my view, there were only three Republicans who could get elected. And I identified them on that Sunday night show as Marco Rubio, John Kasich, and Carly Fiorina. I am here tonight to amend that list. Based on the ebb and flow of the campaign and the lack of ability of some of those candidates to take momentum, which they had, I'm going to take two people off that list. I don't think that John Kasich has done a good job and demonstrated that he is ready to step up. I think he's, at this point, he's a very bright guy. I think on paper, he would be my favorite. I just don't think, you know, campaigns are about, you know, connecting and changing people's minds. And I don't think he's done it. And I think he's running out of time. So I'm going to take him, I'm going to vote him off my own island tonight. And the other person who I don't think has done a job of keeping the campaign momentum going between debates is Carly Fiorina. I don't think she's going to be the Republican nominee for President of the United States. And I want to say something tonight that will shock some people. I'm going to put somebody back on that list, and I'm going to put Donald Trump back on that list. And you may think I'm crazy, and in 3 or 4 weeks I may change my mind again, but I don't think that Donald Trump is a flash in the pan. And I will also say, and I'm not ready to do this tonight other than to admit, because I have quickly dismissed the electability of Ted Cruz, and I'm not going to change my mind based on one television appearance, but I thought his appearance today on Meet the Press was very impressive, and I think he makes a case that if Trump and Carson should fade, and their appeal being strongly tied to being outsiders, the one that could pick up some of the marbles from those two candidacies is Ted Cruz. Now, Chris, you were nodding your head through a portion of what I had to say, but I don't think you agree with everything I said.
No, I pretty much agree with you. I think Ben Carson and is one of these sort of guys who rides up. I'm not sure that he is really personally ready. I think he evokes a lot of support, but I don't know that he has spent the time learning as much about the office and about what presidents do. So I'm not really behind the Ben Carson thing, although he's a very admirable guy. I agree with you about Carly Fiorina. I think that the mainstream media went to work on her, and I think that that has hurt her chances right now. I think Cruz is a brilliant guy, and I think Cruz has a lot to say, and I think that he is very well positioned to pick up from both Carson and Trump. But I agree with you. I don't think Trump is a flash in the pan. Kasich is not showing anything. Not showing anything to me. Yep. Marco Rubio seems to be a safe harbor. He's a lot of people's second choice.
He's hanging in there.
He's hanging in there.
But he's not taking off
but
between
Jeb,
debates.
Jeb has gotten the worst out of these Jeb versus Trump back and forth jabbings.
Right. Jeannie Ives, let's hear from another Republican.
You can't deny. I mean, Ted Cruz had a phenomenal fundraising quarter. What did he raise, like $12 million? It's phenomenal. And so, I mean, you can't dismiss Ted Cruz. He's got a huge grassroots support. I mean, for some reason, I'm on his email list, so I'm getting his stuff all the time. And, you know, nobody's tapped into me from, like, the Bush campaign or anybody else. And I'm out there. You can see easy to find me on email. So people like him because he's principled. And, you know, what I like about the Republican field, though, is we've got a lot of diversity. We've got a Ben Carson. We've got a couple Hispanics. We've got a woman. We bring a lot of depth to our bench. And you don't see that at all in the Democrat field. When you looked at that Democratic debate on Tuesday night, I mean, you looked at that and you're like, well, where's Willie Wilson? I mean, Willie Wilson ran for mayor, and he was out there on radio saying, look, they said that I couldn't come on to this debate stage. Now, Willie Wilson's a African-American, very successful guy, ran for mayor in Chicago, you know, didn't make
but
it through that.
But he, I mean, he is about as prepared as Ben Carson.
Well, here's the deal.
Less
you know what? If you had you have Lincoln Chafee up there, and you don't have somebody like Willie Wilson. Here's my point is that the Democrat field looks just vanilla. There's nothing there.
I'm inclined to agree, and I've made the point previously. I mean, it's ironic the fact that the Republican Party is considered as the party that has a much smaller umbrella, that is not diverse, that is not welcoming to the majority of people in this country, I guess, when it comes to people of color and women. However, when you look at the leadership in terms of who is standing in the debates? I mean, it was so homogenous, and it is so obvious. And I think it's something to think about. What happened that we don't have a more diverse slate of candidates on the Democratic side?
John McCarron, give me your assessment of my assessment. Were you cringing with the people I was putting on or off?
I was cringing because I was sorry to see you drop Kasich, because I thought if I had to vote for one of those guys, and if somehow Lincoln Chafee came through for the Democrats and I pulled the curtain behind me, I might go for Kasich.
John, my point is I agree with you. If I could vote, and by the way, let me also say this, and I've said it over and over again, because who's ever still alive and well when Illinois and primary voters all over the country go, vote for the person that you want. Don't look at the polls. When you vote, go home and look yourself in the mirror and be proud that you voted for the person you wanted and you were not swayed by a poll or anything else. So I'm just saying, as a person, I think John Kasich would be a great president, but I have to, as a political analyst, I have to look at it realistic. He's just not connecting.
I actually agree. I mean, Kasich of the Republican field was the candidate that I liked the most on paper and even principally in terms of how he handles himself. But again, he hasn't caught fire. And it's hard to do that when you have characters like Donald Trump who tend to take all of the air out of the room. And I think that's partly what contributes to him being more under the radar or not being able to get prominent.
I think one of the other things – go ahead, Doug.
Well, this is all wrapped up in I think – Republican rank and file Republican discontent with what's been happening in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that they said, if you give us the House, we'll make a difference. You give them the House, nothing changes. Then they say, give us the Senate, we'll make a difference. You give them the Senate, Nothing changes. And now people we've come back upon ourselves so that a guy like Boehner gets tossed out. Mitch McConnell is next. Nobody supports Mitch McConnell anymore. And I think people are
being the former head of the House Budget Committee means nothing to anybody these days.
He's a very, very capable guy.
Yes.
Who did a lot of work with Bill Clinton to balance the budget. Yep. And Newt Gingrich and all this stuff. Doesn't mean anything.
Got to go. 1-800-723-8029. Back with calls in a moment. I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
John McCarron, I didn't get a chance to ask you your assessment of Ted Cruz. You were saying you made your comment about Kasich, but again, how would you describe the success thus far of Carson and Trump and at least my assessment of whether Ted Cruz is laying out there in the weeds.
I think most Democrats find Cruz really scary. I mean, he's got his lines down, obviously. He's got his one-liners ready to go. They're very sharp. They're very biting. But they're, they're around the bend and over the hill in terms of extreme right-wing ideology. And I just can't imagine him operating on a world stage. But I think a lot of the things we're talking about, the theatrical folks do well in the political business, and more and more so. It began with television. Obviously, now it's with the internet, and attention spans are shorter. Yeah, Bernie Sanders is gonna come across great. He capsulizes everything. I'd say the same of
Trump.
Cruz and Trump. Certainly Trump. I mean, I remember when Reagan first came up. I mean, he was an actor, 20 Mule Team Borax, and I mean, he was great. And the eyebrows and the hair, and I see the same thing in Trump. But I just think people have to think, hey, is this really who we want to send to summit conferences in Geneva?
But here's the question. That isn't necessarily the world you want or the world that I might want or maybe even the people around the table right here would want. But is he reflecting the world we live in more accurately than anybody else? Chris?
Who?
Donald Trump.
Trump. I think he is reflecting discontent. And I think that Bernie Sanders is too. I think there is a lot of discontent to go around. And I think that's not necessarily because of the nuances of policy. It's because our economy is not growing. And we appear to be receding internationally. I mean, I think those are the two issues. And of those two, the economic challenges we face are, I think, more significant in the minds of most voters than is the international. But the international thing, just like in 1978 and 79 and 1980, we're getting to a point where our international impotence is beginning to play a role in how people are viewing the presidential selection.
But when Donald Trump says that the United States messed up the Middle East and that had we left Gaddafi and had we left Saddam Hussein in place, we might have been better off, who is he appealing to? It seems to me that he could be appealing to some people who are supporting Rand Paul. He also could appeal to some of the people that might like Bernie Sanders.
I agree. I think that it's
even when he makes the comment, even though even when he made the comment about George W. Bush being the president on 9/11, he didn't say George Bush was responsible for it, but he did state a fact, and a lot of Democrats blame him for that.
I believe Biden's traction is his association with the domestic agenda of Barack Obama, which for the base of the Democratic Party is far more resonant with its values. And I'm talking about the expansion or the stimulus at the early part of the administration, Dodd-Frank, and health care. And I think those elements are all domestic, and Biden is closer to those things. Those resonate more with base Democrat voters than does Hillary's flying around a lot. I mean, Libya is lost. Syria is lost. ISIS is growing. Russia is in the Middle East. I think that Hillary connects to all of these failures. And I know Democrats are going to say, no, they're not failures. But Hillary is connected to all of these failures. And Biden is connected to the Democratic domestic policy, quote, successes for the Democrats.
I think that's an astute observation, actually. I think that the beginning of the Obama administration was also a shift in foreign policy. So it was more of the leading from behind as opposed to what we had under Bush, which was much more aggressive, getting us into the Iraq war and so on and so forth. Now, 8 years later, we're seeing a lot of dissatisfaction about how things have turned out in Libya, in Syria. We're seeing much more, and it's not all because of the United States, but there's just so much more visible unrest everywhere in the world. And the question is, what is the United States' role in being a leading entity on the world stage?
Then how do you – I'm getting back to the appeal. I want to get your opinion. What is the appeal of Ben Carson? Ben Carson opposed the Bush move in Afghanistan. He didn't think that was a good idea. And that was allegedly the popular war. He didn't even like that idea.
Well,
he said today that what President Bush should have said was, America is going to be petroleum independent, we're going to be energy independent, and that would have sent shockwaves throughout the petro world, and they would have put pressure on, and they would have gotten Osama bin Laden, and they would have turned him over. That was his thinking today when he was on with Chris Wallace.
That's pretty strange.
That's further out there than some of the other candidates, I think.
Well, it might be, but I don't know that that's the hook that gets Ben Carson his supporters. I don't think that they're following him or supporting him because of that. I think he offers – he's an alternative. I think he has a history. He has a backstory that for those of us – I grew up – I read his book, Gift of the Hands, when I was 10 years old. And so we still have this memory of the brilliant neurosurgeon, the first person to separate conjoined twins at the head.
Phenomenal.
He has that backstory that I think gave him that initial push. Now as he begins to talk and we're seeing more about who he is and where his stand is, I think people are starting to question whether or not he's the person that they want at the forefront.
Well, Jeannie.
I think what's going to happen here is the voters are going to decide, you know, what's more pressing for them. I mean, I'm talking about the Democrat side. I mean, is it the foreign policy area, or is it more the economic instability that you've seen, which has really have been the outgrowth of 7 years of Obamanomics? So, I mean, and when you look at Sanders, who actually I think is very credible with a lot of Democrats, for him, he said in that debate, he said the greatest threat to national security was climate change. Really? So if you're actually thinking that we have a mess in the Mideast, we're about ready to give $150 billion to Iran for a deal that's going to lead to a nuclear weapon, and, oh, by the way, we don't agree with that, then you've got a problem with Bernie Sanders.
Liberals love the environment because there is no right or wrong, and you're not going to know it for 10, 20, 30,
well,
40
Bernie
years.
Sanders says, though, it's turnout. He's going to win by government turnout.
You tell people living on the south and west side of Chicago that the greatest threat to them is climate change,
well,
and you see what happens.
Yep,
you better
exactly.
duck.
I
better
agree.
Duck when you say that. We're going to be back for another full hour, 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
Live, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by public policy consultant Amira Enya, Illinois State Representative Jeannie Ives, John McCarron of DePaul University, and conservative WGN analyst Chris Roebling. They all join us. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you want to comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you're listening coast to coast this evening on the internet, we are only presenting the audio portion of our broadcast this evening because our television team, they're all away on vacation this week. So there is the answer to the question. And so we are on radio only this evening. However, tonight there will be a video version of the show that will run at midnight on WYCC in Chicago, and it will deal with a good discussion of criminal justice reform. So there will be some video element, but it is not in sync, as we say, with what we're talking about right now. Phone lines do remain open at 1-800-723-8289. We've got callers on the line. In fact, let's go to Cameron. She's been standing by for quite some time in Athens, Georgia. She's listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio tonight. Cameron, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening. How are y'all?
Okay.
Go back to when you were naming off the top.
Yes, go ahead.
With all due respect, McCarthy Theater, I'm being taken off the table.
We have a very bad connection, so I think you were saying that you disagree with my thought on Carly Fiorina being taken off the table. Let me ask Jeannie Ives if you agree. I didn't pin you down on whether you or not you agree with my assessment that although she's done very well in the debates, and I would say that as a communicator, I would say she's probably the best communicator that's running right now. But between her debate performances, there should be a campaign that is taking off. There were a couple of blips in the right direction, but the most recent polls is that she's down in Iowa and in New Hampshire, which is not good.
I would agree with you on that one, but I think you have to look at her ground game, and I think Iowa's going to tell you a lot about where she could potentially go. And I would keep her on the list simply because of the other people that you've put on the list, including Ted Cruz. You know, he's got a difficult path too, to some degree. So I'm kind of surprised. I have not heard from the Fiorina campaign myself here in Illinois, and I would have thought that we would have been getting some calls about what she's doing in terms of organization. So that concerns
me. So there's two people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are an Illinois state representative, elected female from Wheaton, Illinois,
sure.
One of the most Republican counties, DuPage County in the entire United States. And yet you have not heard from the Bush campaign, you've not heard from the Fiorina campaign, but you said you've heard from the Ted Cruz campaign.
Well, no, I've heard from the Marco Rubio campaign.
Marco Rubio
absolutely.
Campaign. Okay.
Yes.
And, but I thought you were on his – but you're on Ted Cruz's mailing list.
I'm on his mailing list. I'm on Ted Cruz's mailing list. I've not heard from them yet. So I don't know what he's doing either in terms of organization in Illinois, if that's any indication. So Fiorina, though, I would not count her out completely yet. I'd keep her on the list.
I want to talk about – go ahead, Chris.
She is a phenomenal communicator. She is the best person answering questions on either side. She knows her brief. She is very compelling when she answers the questions. One, I mentioned earlier that the mainstream media had gone to work on her. Also, I have to say conservative bloggers went to work on her in directing their attack into Iowa and into New Hampshire. And that's because of, you know, her background and HP – and, you know, sort of involvement with big corporation, big corporate America kind of situation. And they were attacking her on that. And I think that's probably coming out of people like Cruz and Rubio and some others. So,
but Donald Trump has been beaten up on her unmercifully.
Yes, but then he had to pull back on some of that. I mean, it's a very rough world out there. There are a lot of sharks in the tank. There's no question about it. And she hasn't done well between the debates. So I agree with you on that.
I want to offer one further comment. I was very brutal in my assessment of what, you know, where Kasich was and why he's not taken off. I'm going to make another assessment, and I've not taken Marco Rubio off my list of electability, but I do want to ask a practical political question. Part of what Republican candidates generally have is they have that ability to answer the question, would you like to sit down and have a beer with this guy?
Right.
They generally answer yes to that. And I can certainly see Kasich doing it. I certainly can see Trump doing it. Even if he's a billionaire, he talks the language of the barroom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I don't see Marco Rubio having any blue-collar appeal.
But he's a blue-collar guy. He came from no privilege whatsoever.
But.
I mean, he's a guy who came up from nothing.
Right. But I'm talking about perception now. Does anybody agree or disagree with that point? I don't see him. He's almost too good looking, too pretty,
polished.
too polished.
He's a little prim.
Maybe you don't have a beer with him. Maybe you have a glass of champagne with Marco Rubio. I mean, perhaps that's the difference.
Oh, I disagree on that.
But I think that he exudes from the Republican side. He does exude, and I've seen him giving in interviews, and he does exude some level of competence that I think is important.
He's very smart. I'm not taking
okay, but would you have a – I mean, I can see having a beer with Ted Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
Yes,
that guy is a real person. I had lunch with Cruz three years ago. Cowboy boots? I mean,
I had lunch with Cruz 3 years ago in Chicago. He is an amazing conversation.
John,
yes.
Get into this. We're talking about visceral stuff now.
Yeah. I'll have my beer with Chris Christie. Is he still?
Yeah. Yes, he dropped. He's still around.
Sorry, but
you could also have you could also have the nachos.
You mean
and the tater tots, and the onion rings, and the French fries.
Cut it out.
And the side of beef.
Cut it out.
No, I can say that because I'm a little overweight myself. In fact, I'm a lot overweight myself. Is there anybody else? Now, let's talk about the 10,000-pound elephant in the room who we all thought was going to be the 10,000-pound. What happened to him, and is there any way, Chris Roebling, for him to get back into this race?
Not seeing it right now. Not seeing it right now.
Jeannie, you agree with that?
No, I don't see a path in for him at all.
No, I think he lost steam early on and never got it back.
Nicest guy in the world.
He's got the most money, does he not? And
yep.
Maybe there'll be a world event that will occur, some crisis that will remind everyone that we're really electing someone to be president of the United States.
He's the John Connolly of 2016.
Who's got to deal with other world leaders, and we don't want to send some buffoon.
Let's go to Eddie in Sacramento, listening to us on KTKZ. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Sacramento tonight.
Edie,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I wanted to talk about the fact that I believe that Donald Trump is drawing from independents and Democrats. He makes everybody feel good, even if it's laughing at what he says, at how outrageous he can be. And I think that is appealing not only to a lot of Republicans that I know, but to the Democrats and the younger generation.
I think so. I certainly agree with you on the demographics.
He has an amazing appeal. I sat across from him at the City Club lunch here in Chicago. Leslie Munger was right next to me. She's the state controller of the state of Illinois. And I want to tell you, we walked out of that event and said, this guy is tapping into something. He is a lot more polished than – he is not some buffoon or some cartoon character. You hear him speak, and he has got a comprehensive critique of elected officials, and that's what people in the Republican primary want to hear.
And he also says that if he surrounded himself with real bright people, which he generally does, he's a quick study, and he could get brought up to speed on a lot of who the world leaders are that he doesn't know right now. Back shortly from Chicago.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
We were just talking about Saturday Night Live. If you did not see it last evening, go to YouTube because the opening skit, Larry David came on from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he played the role of Bernie Sanders, and I thought he was absolutely dead on. It was probably the best political impression since Tina Fey did Sarah Palin a couple of years ago. But the question is he going to come back? Is Larry David going to become a recurring figure on Saturday Night Live? I don't think so. I don't think they could afford it. I want to switch gears. We will get back to calls at 1-800-723 in just a moment, so don't go away. 1-800-723-8289. But I do want to spend some time talking about another huge issue, and that is the president announced this past week that he is going to keep 9,800 troops in Afghanistan. They were going to be all gone by the end of this year, but he's changed his mind. And Jeannie Ives, what prompted him to change his mind, and did he decide to listen to the military for a change?
He did. He got pushback from General Campbell, who's there on the ground in Afghanistan. He got pushback from retired General Keane, about this troop strength. And 5,500 is just not enough people on the ground there. My biggest concern, though, is them well-defining the mission in Afghanistan for these troops. Now, as it stands right now, they have a training mission, and they also have the mission to isolate, find, and take out particular elements that are terrorist in nature.
John McCarron, should he get credit for listening to the military when maybe his political advisors are advising him to keep his campaign promises and solidify his legendary status amongst the left.
Bruce, I think he's doing what he has to do. You know, he's dealt a bad hand all the way around, although as a senator, I believe he did vote for the incursion into Afghanistan, right. Which I think was a mistake. But, I mean, I'm older than everybody else at the panel, right. Except you, and I grew up, you know, I came of age during the Vietnam era, and I know a mistake when I see it.
Right.
And, I mean, this whole destabilization of the Middle East was based on a terrible mistake, if not a fraud. You know, weapons of mass destruction, Saddam Hussein, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's basically what set the whole.
Do you, going back to our previous discussion, do you salute Donald Trump for saying basically what you've just said about that the United States has messed up the Middle East?
I think it resonated well with the American. I think people are coming around to the realization that we've been terribly informed by our intelligence community, by certainly by our people going back on a bipartisan basis for 20, 30 years about what can be accomplished by military presence overseas.
Chris. That's the problem, though. Let me jump in here super quick.
Sure.
They have got to define the mission over there. And if you don't define it well, then you can't base your troop strength on anything. And I think that's the problem. If they have a mission to train and to take out terrorist elements, that's a big mission. It takes more than 5,500 troops. That's my problem here is you're either going to have that mission there or not. If we don't have a defined mission in there, then we should be out.
More Chris, importantly, Robert, you have to understand the society into which you're intervening.
Understand
sectarian differences, cultural differences. You know, is there any kind of tradition of a constitutional democracy in this part of the world?
Okay, but you know what, John? I know you've been lighting the candle of the fraud of weapons of mass destruction, and you're doing that in behalf of Hillary and the other Democrats who were, quote, duped into voting for it after seeing the same intelligence. But let's just leave that aside because it's ancient history at this point. I want to say something about Afghanistan. Senator Barack Obama was the chairman of that subcommittee of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the United States Senate. And as chairman, he held not one hearing, on that. And
when he ran for... I believe that's in the rearview mirror as well.
Well, I think if you're looking tomorrow, you're asking the same question as Jeannie Ives. What is the mission? I'm glad that he listened to the military, but do we have a definable mission that is achievable, and is it achievable with the 9,800 and other troops who are there?
Here's the one thing that I don't necessarily agree with, and that is I like the idea that he's decided to keep 9,800 there, but what's magic about 9,800, number one? And number two, this is even more importantly, why do you give them an out clause that when they're going to be gone next year? Why should we communicate to anyone who's an enemy of the United States when we're taking people out? Does that make any sense to you, Amara?
It makes a lot of sense, but part of it is because of because people are asking what they're going to want timelines, especially here domestically.
No.
I think people will want to know when are we going to be out.
No,
so the president, I'm talking about from a public average person on the street standpoint and what they expect of their leadership.
Let's not run a military. We're not going to run a military mission based on what the general public think because they don't know military strategy, nor do they understand the principles of war.
But apparently,
you would never, never define when you're going to get out of a
But apparently,
entity,
they felt
ever.
The need to make this public. I mean, the president had stated that we
Which
would be out
wrong,
of Iraq.
He admitted that
in 2014. He said that. So they've been giving deadlines. They've been giving these timelines
so
consistently throughout the administration.
When you talk about the American people that they want an out clause. Isn't part of leadership explaining to the people from time to time that maybe they don't have all of the information that they need to make intelligent decisions? And again, if you've graduated from school and you have some degree of research capability, you will know that 60 years after World War II, we still have troops in
Absolutely.
Germany, and we still have troops in Japan, and we
Korea.
Still have troops in Korea, and we still have troops in Kosovo. So why on earth would anyone think that when we engage in a war in Afghanistan or Iraq, suddenly we're going to be gone in 10 years and there's not going to be any change? change. It seems to me that the education of both Republicans and Democrats is to say, you know what, when we go in, we're going to be there for a long time. The only person that I've heard say that was John McCain.
Right.
I heard him say it for a long, long time.
He was eviscerated by the left for saying it. And this shows that Obama has not run these legacy engagements. Even if you accept John's analysis, which I think is fundamentally flawed and fraudulent in its own face, but even if you accept what John says, you want to say there, when he took office, when he took that oath, when he ran for this office, he took responsibility for the lives of those service people and he took responsibility for our interests. But he hasn't operated on that basis. He's operated on what our colleague says is the political basis. And that has undercut our efforts in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in the Middle East. And now we've got longtime allies saying, we can no longer depend on you. We can no longer trust you. We've got to do the best we can. And he's throwing the entire Middle East up for grabs. And this is not George Bush's fault, John.
John?
You're talking to a guy, Bruce, who supported the Russians in Afghanistan. I supported the Red Army against the Mujahideen. I thought we were on the wrong side there. The Mujahideen was slaughtering school teachers for teaching women. Those were the freedom fighters, according to most reportage in the United States. You know, I can even make a brief for Putin. I mean, in Syria, supporting Assad, and I'm stepping in, making him put down the chemical weapons. That's real politique. I mean,
no,
he really understands.
No, weapons have been put down, John. You're living in a fantasy world. Even the New York Times concedes that the chemical weapons have not been put down. The stuff that was given to the international organization is stuff that he didn't want in the first place. He was trying to get rid of in the first place.
Bruce,
I mean, let's at least deal in the reality of the situation.
At least Putin knows what his mission is. At least Putin understands what he's after.
Well, there's something to be said for
that. I mean, there is something to be – that's where get back to John's right to some degree about Afghanistan. We don't know what our mission is. I honestly don't think that they have defined that mission, and that scares me.
But sure. I think that and also we,
so
scares
we can't
never
even,
have.
They've never defined that mission.
Initially, it was to take out terrorists.
I think that also scares the general public, because if they can't define the mission and articulate the mission, whether or not they're giving away specific strategy, then the public is asking the question of what are we doing there. And so, because it is political, we can say it shouldn't be or not, they're going to probably do what is politically expedient, which is to try to give as much information without compromise. Now, whether that's worked or not, there's something to be said. But I will also say that when we went into for the purposes of finding weapons of mass destruction, there was apparently a very defined mission. That was the reason given for our entering into that part of the world. And then when it turned around that there were no weapons of mass destruction, now it left the public doubting, even when you have a specific mission, is that the reason why we're there or is it not?
But the point is, whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, when you're running for president of the United States, you can be loose with the facts. You can be loose with the interpretation because you don't have all the facts before you. Whether it's saying that I'm going to close Guantanamo, Guantanamo down on day one, and it's still operating because he didn't have all the ducks in the row. Even Hillary Clinton the other night said, you know, I was for this trade agreement, and now I've changed my mind. Days have passed. I've learned more, and so. It gives everyone running for political office basically saying, here is the promise I'm making today, but things may change. Look at the first President Bush. There were going to be no new taxes. Things change. You cannot believe everything that every candidate says.
Even if things change, here's something that doesn't change. The president is in charge of foreign policy, and the president is commander in chief. And so either we've got permanent interests, either we know what our interests are, and we're going to defend our own soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors, or we're not. And I think what Obama has done here has been disastrous to the long-term prospects for the Middle East, because he said the United States is here, but don't worry, everybody, we'll get out. And I believe we have ISIS to show for it, and I believe we've got Putin taking advantage of our receding presence And in Syria, achieving an objective from the Soviet era.
When we come back, 1-800-723-8289. We have callers on the line. I promise we will bring them into the conversation, including a brilliant call coming in from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border and around the world every Sunday.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. And actually, you may have caught me explaining to our guests, but if you go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications website, which is museum.tv, I referenced this a couple of weeks ago, I have recently uncovered some early interviews that I did when I was starting my career. This is 40 years ago. And I've discovered some of those tapes, and we have digitized them, and they can be found at museum.tv. Look under the archive section. And again, I was referencing an interview that I did years ago with Michael Madigan, the Speaker of the Illinois House, the longest-serving House Speaker in the United States at this moment. And again, it is an interview done with him. He is not a man that does many interviews. I don't think most people have ever even heard his voice, but you'll hear it for about 90 minutes in this interview talking about his early career. And again, as I also mentioned to the people listening at KBOI in the great state of Idaho, there's a two-part interview with the late Senator Frank Church, who led the investigation into CIA abuses in the 1970s, and George Wallace talking about the attempt on his life, and Sergeant Shriver running for the presidency of the United States, and a lot of interviews with a lot of different interested people, including William Daley talking about his relationship with his father. Again, interviews done 40 years ago. And again, some of them are fairly relevant to this particular time. And again, you can go there, and you can also, in addition to those interviews, you can hear my colleague. And if you grew up in Chicago, you know the name of John Calloway. And before he became the host of Chicago Tonight, he was a veteran reporter in Chicago working for WBBM Radio. And back in the 1950s and early 60s, he was on the road, literally in America's South, covering the civil rights struggles and riding with the Freedom Riders, and you will hear those interviews, those early radio interviews with some of the leaders of the civil rights movement from my late colleague and good friend, John Calloway. Museum.tv, look in the archive section on the upper navigation bar. And again, there's some significant interesting interviews with a lot of people, most of whom are no longer with us. Around the table this evening, we have Amara Enya. She is a public policy consultant. She was last here when she was speaking with on behalf of the Biden campaign. Are you ready to be introduced comfortably as a member of the Draft Biden campaign or a supporter?
Well, not yet, because they still have not made it clear how they're going to move forward, if and when.
Is there any doubt in your mind that he's running?
As to be honest, seeing the way things have shaken out within the Democratic candidates, I'm actually inching closer to the fact that he will be running. I just hope that he makes an announcement sooner than later, because I do think that he's operating on a tight timeline.
And I've said for 2 months, I know, I have been told that he's running, and that we've been watching a game of charades for the last 2 months, and there's no doubt in my mind that he is running, and probably next week might be a week that it could happen, although he has still a couple more weeks that he has to wait for certain deadlines. I guess the one in New Hampshire is not until the 27th of November. So he has some time on that. Chris Roebling also joins us. Chris is an analyst for WGN Television and also a longtime activist in the Republican Party. And Jeannie Ives joins us. She is a member of the Illinois General Assembly, Republican from Wheaton, and also a graduate of West Point and a captain in the United States Army at one point, but now a mother of five, as you say. And John McCarron joins us, an award-winning journalist for the Chicago Tribune for over 30 years, now teaching journalism at DePaul University. And those are our guests around the table this evening. And let's go to Sam, listening to us in beautiful Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He's got a comment about Donald Trump.
Bruce, I'm a regular listener and a lifelong GOP voter. And it's, I almost follow politics religiously, and I listen to people out here on the ground of all races and economic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear conversations, and it's amazing that Trump has tapped into something so big. And I think what people don't understand is that he's tapped into the same thing that Ronald Reagan did back in the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, he has tapped into the fact that the people believe, they believe that he loves America and he loves the American people. And the American people are tired of politicians who don't and are lining their pockets and their cronies at the expense of the American taxpayer and ripping them off. They don't feel like the current politicians really care about this country. When Obama negotiates with Iran, I don't feel like he's negotiating against Iran. I feel like he's negotiating with them. And I think that's what Trump simply has tapped into.
Do you believe, let me just, so you are probably pleased if you listen every week, you're probably pleased with what I said in the first hour, that I am to the point where I think Donald Trump is about to go on to my list of people that can be elected. And you probably cheered if you watched Chris Wallace on Fox Sunday News today. Chris Wallace came out and said it. He said that he is now a believer that Donald Trump could be elected. And not everybody on the panel agreed with him, but he was the first. My comments are not based on that, but that's a significant national media person who made that comment.
I've been saying that for 3 months, bro.
Sam, you were ahead of the curve.
God love you, Sam, for being a regular listener to Bruce's program, but I want to tell you something. Ronald Reagan got involved with public policy in the 1950s, and it meant the world to him. And he knew one heck of a lot, notwithstanding what the liberal news media always said about him or how they attacked him for being a B-movie actor and all this stuff. Ronald Reagan knew public policy long before he ran for governor of California. He served 8 years out there. Hold on a second, Sam. I didn't interrupt you. Please don't interrupt me. Okay?
Let him finish. Then we'll go back to you,
Ronald Reagan knew policy, and he met with Brezhnev, went out at San Clemente when Nixon was president. He was no newcomer to national politics when he ran for the third time. He ran in 68, he ran in 76, and then he ran in 79, and he got himself elected. Now, Donald Trump's got a lot of compelling qualities. But Donald Trump, I am going to tell you, is no Ronald Reagan. And Donald Trump, I'm not saying he doesn't love America as much as Reagan did, but he sure as heck does not know policy the way that Reagan did. And he sure as heck has not got the record in public office.
Okay, Chris, Ronald but Reagan wait a minute here.
Let's Jeannie, and then we're going to go back to Sam.
Here.
Jeannie.
Chris, though, I mean, I hate to disagree with my Republican colleague here, and I don't necessarily say I'm going to disagree with you, but think about this. You said early on that you thought that some of Trump's supporters included Democrats and independents.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so here's what's interesting. I think Sam's really got something going on here. Donald Trump is a populist, and he does love America. Nobody doubts that this guy right. loves America. But what do you get from Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders is also a populist on the Democrat side, but Bernie Sanders basically says he wants us to be more like Denmark. And that's where the difference lies. Trump is an optimist. Trump wants America to be great again. And nobody doubts that. When you put a Trump versus a Sanders up, what do you have? You have somebody who really believes in America and somebody who does not believe in America but wants us to be like Denmark. And that's a huge difference. That's where Trump's got a pathway to connect with both sides because he's a populist.
There's one other thing, and then I want to get – and we're going to give Sam an opportunity to say the final word and then ask our Democrats if they want to comment as well. The one thing that you referenced about, you know, the early dismissal of Ronald Reagan as a celebrity because he was a movie star. On the scale of celebrityhood – Donald Trump is significantly more successful, more of a celebrity at this point in his career than Ronald Reagan was when he was, as you say, he was the host of Death Valley Days, and he was a B-movie star, albeit one for many years, and always playing likable roles. Donald Trump as the host of and the star of The Apprentice. Was 10 times the television personality than Ronald Reagan was, insofar as just reach and ratings and everything else. You have GE Theater, you have Death Valley Days.
There are a lot of guys on TV. There's only one Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan is one of the five or six greatest presidents we've ever had, and Donald Trump is not Ronald Reagan. Let me tell you.
No.
That's true, but it's what people's perceptions are right now.
My point is, I'm talking about on the celebrity scale.
Okay.
Donald Trump is a bigger celebrity at this point in his career than Ronald Reagan was. John McCarran.
Yeah, let me quiet Chris down just for a second and throw out one data point, which I think explains almost everything that we're talking about tonight and that you're going to be talking about in the Sundays over the next year. And this is a data point that came out recently from the Brookings Institution, and Chris is already rolling his eyes because he thinks that's a liberal left-wing think tank. But it's based on census data, and that is this. The average working guy in America, average, median, is making the same money now as he made in 1973. And that goes back through several Republican and Democratic administrations. I mean, that is the trend here. It's basically stagnation over the past 30 years, and that's what Bernie Sanders is screaming about, and that's what Donald Trump is. I mean, there's anger out there. There's a lot of anger. Chris said earlier tonight that there's anger. And American politics in the 21st century is about who's going to wear the jacket for that situation. Who's going to get the blame?
No, the Malthusians think that. The leftists think that. That's what you think. The right, the Republicans think there is a vast opportunity tomorrow for every American. What you guys want is to just say, this is the only pie we've got, and everybody has to take left. This is exactly what President Carter said in 77 when he said we all have to lower our expectations.
All right. On that note, 1-800-723-8289. There are 386 days to Election Day. But, ready for this? Only 105 days before the Iowa caucus. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289, live from Chicago.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's head to Mike in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY, one of our oldest affiliates. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you for taking my call. I would like to bring up President Obama's foreign policy, and you know, there seems to be no response from the Obama administration on Russia's growing involvement in Syria, on China's continued expansion. And Hillary Clinton was part of this foreign policy. Just what is his foreign policy?
Well, let John start this one off. And you mentioned Russia in your reference, Mike. Yes. So let's just talk about Russia's role at the moment, and whether or not Russia is leading the way far more than the President of the United States on the world stage at the moment, John.
I think you need to understand Barack Obama from his beginnings in Chicago as a community organizer. I think he believed from the get-go that reasonable men and women can sit around the table and come to a reasonable conclusion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then he ran into the real politique of international relations, and it turned out everybody doesn't want the same thing. And I Chris doesn't like me to say this, but he was also handed an already poisoned situation in the Middle East, the chaos that
which he made worse
that
than
he probably has. Iraq.
By the way, that is.
One at a time. Are you through? Because we're going to pass on.
Yeah,
to
I'm
Jeannie
I'm
Eisen.
Done. I'm just saying that right organizers tend to think that people can talk and get together and work everything out, and in fact, in international relations, that's often not the case.
So, on the world stage, when we send a community organizer up against the former head of KGB. We are likely to get skunked. Jeannie, do you see it the same way?
Absolutely. And you know what scares me is this whole Iran deal and the fact that we're giving Iran $150 billion. That's going to go straight into Russia.
They're selling their oil again. We're not giving them. I think it's really unfair for you to say that they're being given.
You know, we can produce our own oil in this country, and we don't need to be doing deals with Iran.
We can prevent that $150 billion from going.
The whole point is, though, that all that sort of trade deal that we do with Iran, if you really want to believe that that's what's going to happen that's just going to line Putin's pockets, quite frankly, by buying military weapons that are going to be used against us.
Have we been outsmarted by Vladimir Putin?
Yes.
Have we been outsmarted by Vladimir Putin, Chris?
Absolutely.
Have we been outsmarted by Vladimir Putin, in your view, Amira Enya?
Possibly. Possibly. I think there is something to be said about being a community organizer. It's about finding areas upon which people can agree. And it is a valuable tool to have, especially when you're working in a space that is so divided and so polarized. But on the international stage, it does work a little bit differently. But what I want to note is that when President Obama came in, if you can recall, he had gotten the Nobel Prize before he even did anything, right? I think it was because the environment at the time was one of exhaustion with what was happening around the world, with the wars, with the misleading information about why we were sending our young people, our military, to fight in these wars. And so there was a sense of exhaustion around it. And I think for that reason, it spurred the kind of foreign policy that is more about leading from behind.
I will bet that committee would like to have that vote taken back.
Barack Obama.
Go talk to Poland. Ask them if they're happy that Ronald Reagan stood for peace through strength and said, guess what? We're not going to come together as community organizers and decide on a compromise here. Ask them if they're happy that Ronald Reagan stood for something against Gorbachev and actually, you know, freed the entire eastern side.
Chris, quick question to you. I want to look ahead now.
Yeah.
What does the Republican Party nominee, whoever that is, what is the speech they have to give to the American people to once again put the United States back in the forefront of leading and not following the Russian bear?
The Republican nominee is going to say, will say, in Cleveland or wherever we're having, in Cleveland, here is what he or she will say. He or she will say that we are going to have a robust foreign policy defending and advancing America's interests, the security of our allies, and the cause of liberty throughout the world. That is what the Republican nominee will say, and I believe that will be a cause of the election of the Republican nominee in the fall of 2016. And I want to say, John, if you replay what John just said, and I appreciate very much what he just said, because I think he just said in a nice way that Barack Obama was horribly unprepared to become the president of the United States and the titular leader of the free world.
So are you saying, though, if that's true, if Barack Obama was dramatically unprepared because he was a community organizer?
No, because he was a gauzy-headed liberal who thought you could sit down and make nice.
He's a gauzy-headed liberal
who
was a community organizer and he was unqualified. Can you also say then that Carly Fiorina maybe is unqualified? Would you say that Ben Carson is unqualified?
Well, Carson,
would you say that
about...
Donald Trump is unqualified?
No,
who would be qualified your definition
as a
Republican who isn't going to make the same mistakes because there are some first-term senators also running for president?
I think that if you take a sober look at our first-term senators and you look at how they view the world, they are far more planted in reality than Barack Obama and his retinue. And I think that Carly Fiorina has already demonstrated a lot of leadership and a lot of understanding of the world situation. I think that Kasich, Cruz, Rubio, Bush, these guys are all solid.
How about the two front runners?
And Carson,
how about the two front runners?
I don't feel at all comfortable with either of them right now. I don't feel comfortable with Carson or with Trump right now.
On that note, we're going to have to say farewell to Chris Roebling, who is one of our Republicans. Jeannie Ives, also state representative, one of our Republicans this evening. John McCarron from DePaul University and a journalist, and also Amara Enya. She is a public policy consultant considering possibly entering a congressional race, but we thank you all for being with us. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown, is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.